What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're going to get to some nonsense, the second segment. But I want to talk about this with our friend Shaletta, who is here. I'm going to read right from a Star Tribune story, and I want to see your reaction to your good friend, the governor of the state. The Tim Walz budget would substantially, according to the Star Tribune, and others wrote the same thing, would substantially reduce projected state spending on Medicaid waivers that serves 70,000 low-income Minnesotans with disabilities. The waivers cover a wide range of services that help people survive and live more independently, including home health services, personal care insurers, transportation, and emotional support. The proposal would not decrease the number of people getting waivers, but would reduce the growth in how much money they get each year. Okay. That ticks me off because we, the two of us, are fortunate. We've had some business success, so we're not in that group. Now, do the kids that we have combined, the four kids that we have, your three kids on the spectrum, my son on the spectrum, do they have waivers and other qualifications? Absolutely they do. And for what they are eligible, I hope they qualify. But this is where we're going to start drawing lines low income individuals with disabilities. Are you bleeping kidding me?
Okay, so I just don't know. Like, I don't remember him falling on the campaign trail and hitting his head anywhere. I don't know what's going on with this because there are so many families who depend on this for survival.
Correct.
There are parents who cannot keep a job because they are going back and forth to the school, back and forth to the doctor, back and forth to the developmental pediatrician or therapist's office, and they can't stay on the job. And so the waivers and the programs and services that are tied to that is a lifeline for so many families. Before my life started jumping off and I started living better,
yep,
I was working. And you know this story. This is well documented.
Yep.
I was working 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. at WCCO Radio, driving home to Cottage Grove. I would sleep in the driveway from 5 to 6. And then when my kids woke up, they would wake me up in the driveway, and then I would come in the house, and then I would be up all day with them. I would go to bed at 6 o'clock and then wake up at 7 and go back to work. I ran into my house and didn't know about the waiver services and the programs associated with them until I was falling asleep talking to somebody who has a child with special needs. And because of those waiver programs, I was able to decrease my hours, work during the day, got on your show, was your temporary producer, and I didn't have to work that 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. I was present with my kids. I was able to get to the school, volunteer, help them. I was able to work with them at home. And the only reason that my kids are doing better and that my life is right now is because I had access to those programs programs and services, and I didn't have to work overnights and weekends to help out around the house and pay these bills.
I know this extraordinarily well, and I am so lucky that my ex-wife Kathleen is so incredibly diligent at this. But when you have someone in your life, whether they're younger or they're older, and you become their guardian, the amount of paperwork, the amount of electronic paperwork that you have to file, that you have to fill, the meetings you have to have, it's unbleeping believable. Okay. And my son qualifies for some. It doesn't qualify for a lot of us. And I'm not talking about this because this particular program does not cover me. But I have a son with special needs. And I just heard you talk about it. And I have so many other friends with kids who are affected. This country is so incredibly derelict in our funding for special education at the state level and at the federal level. And I can assure you, the times I've interviewed, going back, even though, you know, it probably resonated more with me when Quentin was getting older, so it was probably more Tim Pawlenty and Mark Dayton and Tim Walz. And whenever they see and I bring this up, they're like, that's a really good point, that's a really good point. You know what? It doesn't happen. And so I get it. We're facing some financial concerns, partially because of what the Walls and the trifecta did last year. And I get it. We have to face difficult decisions. But this is where we're going to low-income families with kids with disabilities.
Okay, this is it's one thing to be a low-income family. It's a whole nother thing to be a low-income family with a child who has special needs. That's a whole different ball game. And the services and resources that are available, it gets you out of the system. This is not something people take advantage of or for granted. Listen, I didn't stick around and hang on to this little piece of check. I didn't stick around and hang on to these services. I said, you know what? If I can just sleep at night, it just let me sleep. It let me get up to the school. It let me stop running into the house. It let me be there and present for my children and get more than 1 hour of sleep in the driveway. And now look at where my life is. Yep. If I hadn't had these services, I wouldn't be where I am today. I'd still be 8P to 4A overnights and weekends just so I could keep a roof over our head and pay a few bills.
And I understand this state has been racked by fraud the last 3-4 years with Feeding Our Future and what is now being investigated with the autism centers. People are not profiting off this. There isn't a slush fund of tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars. And by the way, if there are people within this 70,000 who we find out through investigations are lying, disqualify them.
Right.
Okay, right. But don't punish the other people. And this just infuriates me because I felt like they went way too far last year, didn't plan for the future, and now when they got to tighten things up, the sales tax debate, rightfully so, dominated the conversation yesterday. But this, a part of it, again, that's another reason why we will reach out again because I want to hear Governor Walz explain this to me and others who are either directly touched by it, tangentially touched by it, or can empathize with it because they have a child or children in the same position. But at this point, at least financially, you're not at this level. This is not where we cut. Period. End of discussion.
And this is the thing. 1 in 36 kids in Minnesota has autism. And so you know somebody. If it's not you and your child, it's your neighbor's child. It's your granddaughter. And these programs and services are not something that people, like you said, are taking advantage of. We're not sitting up here getting rich and buying a Lexus or got a vacation home down in Florida. You know, people are using these programs and services to help their children and their families have a better quality of life. I promise to God, I should be the poster child for how these services help families go from just surviving to thriving, how these programs and services help children do better, help parents live better and be present for their children. And then once they get to a point they no longer need it, then here you go. Here's a space open and available because we don't even qualify anymore because I was able to do something different with my life.
Shaletta is here. You want to react? You certainly can. 651-461-9226. Some lighter topics. 4 Feisty Friday herself, Shaletta Brundage, here on CCO.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, one more serious topic before we get to some lighter stuff with Feisty Friday herself, Shaletta Brundage. Monday, MLK. First of all, where do you stand on the debate of legislators who are not going to attend the Trump inauguration? And they're citing as a reason MLK Day. What do you think?
I think everybody's trying to preserve their mental health. And people are trying to get away from anything that is going to disrupt their peace and doing something to get away from the thing that they know is about to disrupt the country. So, you know, nobody wants, that I know, wants to sit at home and watch it. They're looking for ways to get out and do something. Legislators are people too.
But there are tens of millions of people who voted for Donald Trump. The two of us are not. Right?
I said people I know.
Yeah.
So a lot of people will be watching and cheering. They have watch parties, and that's great. But I'm not going to begrudge anybody, legislators included, who say, you know what, I'm going to do something to get my mind off of this. I'm going to get out in community.
You told Dave an interesting story how you were invited to an event. It's tomorrow, noon to 3.
Mm-hmm.
They know you host a show.
How
should we feel overall, not just this event, but overall, mm-hmm. if you get invited to something and they know you can't make it? Because there are certain people who do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You know, are they really my friends? Because they called, and I was like, hey, how you doing? Yeah, Shaletta, we're having an event tomorrow from noon to 3. I know you got your radio show. Well, then why are you having an event from noon to 3?
That's correct.
If you want me to come, the event is 3 to 6. Oh, you have a breakfast until 11:30 or so, and then let me whip on over to the station. But you calling me, I got one job, right? I work for myself, so everything else is flexible except this one thing.
Hold on, Dave. I think we need to chime in.
I know where you're going. I know where you're going.
Maybe this person is familiar with your commitment to noon to 3.
Yes, there's that.
Which is tepid. You know, your Saturday commitment, noon to 3. Dave, what, tepid? I mean,
tepid's a kind word.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's frosty.
Yes. So maybe
that. So I don't know if they really wanted me there. You know, they just probably won't. You think they just wanted to say, well, we invited Shaletta, but she just wasn't able to come.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if y'all having something and I don't get invited, then I'm going to get mad and I'm going to feel some kind of way. Then I might blow you up on social media and nobody wants that clickbait in their life because I'm a tagger. You know, I'm a tagger. You know that.
Dave, I walked out to grab a little food. And then you got a phone call from someone at about 12:58, 12:59. Tell folks about that call.
This person identified themselves as Sean. And I said, excuse me? Yeah, this is Sean, Shaletta's ex-husband. Shaletta's not going to be in today. And I said, well, that's interesting. What's going on? And Sean, Shaletta's ex-husband, allegedly, told me that Shaletta's been a bad girl and she won't be in today.
She's been a bad girl. Whoa.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting. Mm.
Something you'd like
now
to tell us.
He does have your phone number.
Yeah.
And he has Chad's number because, you know, for emergency purposes and that kind of thing. But that doesn't even sound like him. Sean has never called. So, I mean, how did this end? What happened at the end of this conversation? This is very interesting.
The number they called was the station number. It wasn't my personal or something like that.
Oh.
They called the station directly, which, kind of a giveaway.
Yeah.
But I simply said, okay. Thank you for the information. As, by the way, a moment prior to that, you had texted me that you were going to be home, so I should give you a call.
You know what? You know, Sean may be on some new medication. Now, I know we're divorced, but he's here now putting up some towel racks.
Oh, my
Sean!
Honestly.
I have to ask you a question. Some man called the radio station. Oh, he has a ladder. It looks like he's doing some stuff. What are you Jeez. Doing? Are you putting up light fixtures or something? What are you doing right now? So he's got a ladder. Oh, he's putting up curtains for me, guys.
Run!
Wow.
Run!
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 I'm listening to it on the radio.
Yeah. Run, Sean. Please.
Yeah, I got you, Chad.
Run. What can I do? How can I distract her so you can escape?
There's no distracting this.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm so sorry.
We walked in about a million different areas.
Yeah. You know what? You know what, Sean? On early in February, we're having an event to raise money for folks in food. In March, we're going to have an event for you. How can Sean escape Shaletta? I want to announce it right here.
You can send me on a vacation.
Yeah, permanent. Permanent. Yeah, Sean is out of vacation.
He's out of town.
He is out of vacation.
That's enough talking.
He's out of vacation to Phoenix, Arizona.
I came down here to check on
brand
him.
New house.
He's got a ladder. He's putting up curtains. He's doing towel racks. So I know he did not have time to call you guys to say anything. So that surely was a fake Sean because he's very busy right now.
Data from this study suggested they interviewed and studied the data from almost 20,000 participants and concluded that parents do indeed treat their children differently and they have a favorite. So it's different now because you can treat your kids differently, right? Because there are the different challenges, different characteristics, different strengths. But a favorite. Does Shaletta Brundage believe the majority of parents have a favorite child?
Absolutely. I have a favorite child, and I've told all four of my children, Brandon is my favorite. He will tell you I'm the favorite child.
Yep.
In fact, when he labels things here at the house, he writes Brandon F. BFC, BC, BFC, Brandon Favorite Child.
I was worried what that meant, okay?
Brandon Favorite Child, right? And I have told the kids, listen, in my will, Brandon gets everything. Be nice to Brandon, because I'm not splitting this four ways,
yeah.
Okay? Brandon is a child who prays for me. Brandon is a child who holds the door open for me. Brandon is a child who, when he gets home from school, he wants to know how my day was. Why would I split the money with the rest of y'all, and nobody even says thank you for Christmas gifts? No, no, no.
I didn't realize Donald Trump had joined the conversation. What can you do for me? And then I'll let you know what I'm going to do for you, Dave. It's a transaction. That's what we've heard here.
Mm-hmm. She looks at Brandon like Donald looks at Barron.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm telling you. When he walks in the door, everybody else, they go to their thing. They get their iPad. They sit down, Mom, how was your day? Mom, do you need anything? Can I get you some water? When we're going outside, let me get the door for you, Mom. Baby, yes, I have a favorite. I sure do, and they all know it. I tell them to their face. Mm-mm.
Percentage of people, Dave Harrigan, it's clear Shaletta is 100%, okay? Percentage of parents who, if they were given truth serum, would admit they have a favorite if they have at least two children?
65%.
65.
Yeah, about two-thirds.
Right. Do you think that's awful, or is it reality, Dave?
I think it's reality.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Chad, you know you have a favorite.
Well, I say that to Q, but I love Hunter and Griffin every bit as much. Not a speck more or less.
That's not answering the question. Just
yes.
Because you love them as much doesn't mean you don't have
a
favorite.
Doesn't mean you don't have a favorite. Break it down. Break it down for them, Dave. Yes.
Well, here's the example I'll tell, and then we got to pause and talk to Corey Provis. There was somebody very important in my life for an extended period of time, and she would tell me that her husband completely favored one of the kids. I was going, really? Sure. Well, then I finally meet this person, comes into the house, says the one child, the favorite's nickname. Hey, I won't say the nickname right now, but in the sweetest voice you've heard. And I'm thinking, wow, seems like this guy. And then says the other kid's name in a way, if the police are trying to get someone to leave a building. And I went, yeah, I think I saw it. I think I saw it right there. So we might have to expand on this topic. This could be a good talker. So,
yes.
All right. Do you feed your hostage, or does he leave after
when he's done putting up this towel rack and putting up those curtains? He's to pick the kids up from school. And then I think he's going to fry some chicken and make some
Exactly.
Big wedge potatoes.
Yeah. So he then feeds you after he does all the work at the house.
After he does all the work. Yeah.
Cottage Grove police, please find this house. Thank you.
Love y'all. Bye.
Corey Provis yesterday found out someone extraordinarily close to him, Bob Uecker, passed away. And we talked about Uecker for 2 seconds. We had Paul Molitor on. It's just a unique life. So Corey loses Bob Uecker and then also has to call a Gopher game and calls a brilliant Gopher game. The game winner from Dawson Garcia nails the call. We reached out to Corey yesterday, rightfully so. He needed some time, but Corey reached out today. He's willing to join us. Corey Provis in moments on Newstalk 830 WCCO. Most people in town know Corey Provis for his great work with the Twins, primarily radio until last year and this upcoming year when he stepped in as Dick Bremer stepped away, and he was great last year just like he has been on radio and will be again this year. You also know Corey from his work on Big Ten Network, including last night, calling the game courtside at Williams when Dawson Garcia, who had a brilliant game, hits a three from the logo, and Corey nailed the call. But yesterday was an extraordinarily difficult day for Corey Provis because, as we discuss multiple segments on our own, and then our good friend Paul Molitor came on, a incredibly unique individual in Bob Uecker passed away, 54 years calling the Brewers, a Milwaukee native, all the tremendous work he did away from the Brewers, whether it's Johnny Carson, whether it's Miller Lite, whether it's Mr. Belvedere, whether it's Harry Doyle, all the charity work that he did. And there has been an outpouring of genuine, sincere storytelling that makes you laugh and can make you cry about Bob Uecker and this full life that he led. Corey Provis, first play-by-play gig after doing some pregame and postgame work with Cubs, was with Bob Uecker in Milwaukee starting in 09. And I know yesterday was incredibly difficult, and I'm sure today is still difficult. And you know the respect I have for you. I so appreciate you coming on. In my deepest sympathies, when you lose somebody that close to you, it is never, ever easy. How did you find out, and how much did you know about Bob's health battle, which was taking place?
I found out early yesterday morning that he had passed away, and I knew in 23 that things had taken a turn, and how much he was going to disclose, I just kept it quiet. I knew that things popped up in 23 that were not promising, and I know that he was trying a couple of different treatment programs, and then, you know, 2024, I got a better read when I saw him, and I got to really, not so much him, but got to see the people that are around him every day. And I'm not just talking about the broadcasters, but there's some people that for many years that have been, you know, very close with Bob for a variety of reasons that I got to know and remain close to. And they kind of filled me in on kind of where this was heading, and we chatted after the season was over. It was via text, and he never revealed too much. I did not know how dire it was getting, though. My understanding was the last 6 weeks. I didn't know that drastic of a downturn. Had I known, I certainly would have been more proactive into trying to get to Milwaukee to see him, which I sadly never did. But if you get a chance, and maybe you played a yesterday chat, Jeff Levering, who does a phenomenal job, and he's been Bob's partner the last 9 years on radio, as Jeff was signing off the postseason last year after being eliminated in just heartbreaking fashion by the Mets, you start to hear emotion come out of Jeff's voice, and tears are flowing. He's fighting back because I think he knew that this may be the last time that he's with Bob in the booth. I think he had an inkling then, and he was dead on. And sadly, Mr. Baseball is gone.
Well, what I found out, and I consumed just a lot of stuff yesterday and last night, is so this is the best of three series with the Mets, that Bob tried to broadcast those first two games and couldn't do it. He just, his health was not up. I think I even read where he did the Pat Murphy show, right, before game two and just couldn't do it. And then not only could you hear Jeff, but when he is signing off his part, Corey, and this is just me from afar. Now, this is somebody you know extraordinarily well. You can hear Bob potentially. Maybe we're playing too much hindsight, and I hate doing that, but you know, he's talking about how much it stings. I think he knows. First of all, the Brewers have overcome a lot of financial challenges year after year, and really were a very good team last year. And just as we know, those three-game series go so fast. And then just to hear him signing off, with him potentially knowing that maybe he's not going to broadcast anymore, there's just a little bit different in his voice.
Yeah, I think if you go back and you can connect some dots, that I think many people had a feeling, and they were right, that this might be the end of a half century run that nobody will ever forget. You know, that booth is a cherished place there. It's a massive, massive booth. It's the two biggest broadcast booths I've ever seen in terms of radio belong to two guys who are sadly now gone, but two former teammates, Mike Shannon in St. Louis and Bob Uecker's booth in Milwaukee, two guys in that same Cardinals team.
Right.
And they had a lot of say into what the design was going to be, because it was for broadcasting, but also for entertainment.
Yep.
And because there were people always in there, but in the booth, Bob would sit on the right. I was on the left. So I would do the pregame show, and I'd do my innings, and I'd do the postgame show. And Bob was never in a hurry to leave. But as I'm starting the postgame show, he'd pack up his bag, and you're on the air. And if you got that tap on your shoulder, didn't happen every night, but if you got that tap, like him saying goodbye, it was also like, good job.
Yeah.
And that never I never forgot that. And as time went by, I looked forward to that even more when I'd get that tap from him. And now I'm not getting all teary-eyed now. It's just today's been harder for me than it was yesterday.
How come?
Because I had the game. I had the game.
Yeah,
I had the game last night, and he would have been so mad at me.
Yep.
He would have been so mad at me if I didn't work last night, or if I did not do my best last night. So I had that to distract me, and now today's been harder. You know, that's why I wasn't ready mentally, emotionally to do a lot of interviews yesterday, and now today it's coming out a bit more just because I don't have that same, you know, basketball distraction that I had last night.
Well, I watched a fair amount of that game last night, and if I had no idea, I wouldn't have known, right? So that's a testament to your skill throughout the game and laying it out, working with your partner. Obviously, the Garcia call was right on. You absolutely nailed it. So credit to you there. When you get the gig, and now it's your first full-time job, and this is something you've wanted, and now you're getting it with this true icon. Not, you know, we throw that term out way too easy and quickly, but here's Bob Uecker. What was it like when you're first meeting him, first interacting with him, and getting a feel for what it's going to be like during just these 8 months you guys are going to be together?
Well, I was lucky in a sense because where I came from, and two things, with the Cubs and WGN Radio, Pat Hughes, now in the Hall of Fame, he was Bob's partner for 12 years. So yeah, Pat was there from 84 to 96. And then secondly, the guy that was with Pat Hughes, who's also in the Hall of Fame, is an icon in Ron Santo.
That's right.
And my job was to be, yes, I was doing the pregame show and the postgame show in the fifth inning, but me along with our engineer, we traveled, our engineer's name was Matt Bolts, we had to just kind of be Ronnie's helper. You know, Ronnie, you know, because of his diabetes, he had two prosthetic legs. So it wasn't obviously easy for him to get around. So we had to just be with him along the way at every stop and help him, you know, get to the booth, get on the bus, get to the plane, and just you name it, we were around him. So Santa was such a beloved figure that he was an icon. He was an icon amongst Cub fans. So I got a chance to see that. He was the star attraction. These were good teams, but he was the star attraction. So I was prepared in that regard because I just left somebody who was beloved. But the difference between Ron and Uecker is that Uecker was more than just a beloved baseball figure. He spanned different generations, different genders, different backgrounds because of his different skills and where he kind of fit in. Some, yes, from his playing career, but then many from The Tonight Show, many from Belvedere, many from the Miller Lite commercials, and then you get to the Major League movies. He just appealed to so many different people that it wasn't just specific on the game, and that was different. So when we would leave, when the Brewers bus would leave Wrigley Field on Sheffield Avenue, the right field gate, you know, Bob, he was sitting seat 1A. You know, Bob would get on the bus and he'd get on the plane before the manager, before the general manager. And that doesn't happen in this game.
No.
Okay, I mean, you go when the manager goes.
That is correct. Yeah.
But no, but Bob, he was sitting position A.
That's great.
He kind of let it go, and we followed his lead. So you know, they're screaming for Uecker on the bus. Uke, all these chants. I mean, he was the guy. The cameras flashing. I mean, he was the star attraction and one of his best. I mean, he had so many great lines. And his voice, I just can hear to this day. And, you know, he'd be like, Uke, will you sign? He's like, no, I only sign at the ballpark. You know, I don't sign at the hotel. And then those same people would come to the ballpark. Uke, you sign? I only sign at the hotel. You know, I don't sign at the ballpark. I mean, he just would have so much fun with these people.
That's great.
And I just, and so now I use that line a lot. Nobody wants my autograph, but I get off the bus and I'll tell people, I'm like, you know, I'm not signing morning. I only sign at the hotel. I'm not
you're going up to people who aren't asking you for an autograph and
no,
you tell them.
Of course not. Of course not. But I just tell, you know, all the guys, you know, Kyle Hammer, I'm like, I'm not signing today.
Yeah.
And just things like that I've just taken with me.
I'm just thinking my few years calling the Twins before I had to go back to concert on the Wolves and the Fan. If I sat in the front seat and TK came on the bus, I may have been shot if that would have taken or a couple different Wolves head coaches. That never would have happened. Okay.
You know, and maybe, Chad, maybe you've had, you know, John Gordon on. I would invite you to reach out to him because Uke had so much fun. So much fun with John Gordon. So much fun.
Why do you think they connected so much?
I just think because there were times where Gordo was so set on calling the game and, you know, Bob, that famous story where Bob, he grabbed like 20 towels and he like mummified himself, right? And he just draped all these towels over his body and just stood right next to Gordo when he was calling a game and trying to have him get through it. I mean, he just grabbed all these towels from the clubhouse. I bet John Gordon's got so many great stories, too.
We should.
About Uke and trying to get through a broadcast when Bob would come and mess with him.
Oh, yeah. So one of my years interning here, it was Gordo's first year. It was 87. I mean, I know how serious and detailed and meticulous Gordo was. In fact, Gordo let me – this is when I'm doing the Wolves, and we're in Seattle, and the Twins are in Seattle, and I come up, and we might have had a couple adult beverages. And so I see this is when I think Robbie and Steve are running media relations. And I see Anthony. I'm like, can I come with the press? I come with that. And I go to Gordo. I go, what's going on? He's like, can't talk right now. Can't talk right now. Can we talk? I go, just let me sign off the broadcast. You can't do that. You're working. I go, it was an extra inning game. I go, it's 12:45 back home. And he goes, sure. So I sign off, and he said, I'm going to get fired for this. I go, I am going to get – he's just telling me he's going to get fired. I'm like, nobody is going to fire. I go, let me do one more thing. Let me do the post-game download. He's going, no way. And so he lets me do it, and he was so uptight about it. But you had to have fun. So I could see Uecker doing that with John. Last thing before we go. Bob Uecker off-air versus Bob Uecker on-air. Was there much of a difference?
He had to always be on, you know, because when everybody, it would be a highlight of somebody's day, if not their year, when they would get a chance to meet him. So I would do innings 3, 4, and 7, right, play by play. And there were times that's when there would be dignitaries that would stop by the booth from, you name it, from Capitol Hill to the state legislature to Hollywood to, you name it, would come to the booth, and there'd be like a party going on in the booth. And you know, I think you'd hear it in the background. I mean, you'd have
for
to,
sure.
hear,
you
I'm
had to hear
call
it.
The game, and you hear this party going on in the background. But I'm not. What am I going to tell Bob Uecker? how's that going to go? That's not going to go very well. But he had to always be on. And I just, you know, was there a big difference? The stuff that I've thought a lot about today is, and you've heard the calls, and they're all great.
They're great.
But the calls that you probably haven't heard are the ones that I love these when, you know, Bob was very connected to the Make-A-Wish Foundation of Wisconsin. Yep. So if he did commercials, if he did anything, he would get that money and donate every cent to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And he'd have these kids come in to see him. And these kids are, you know, they're dying. The terminally ill children that come in with their families. And Bob would take this kid and put this kid, boy or girl, on his lap and call the game the second inning. And say, yeah, you seem nervous. You're all right. You want a beer? Want a Miller Lite? You're fine. This 8-year-old kid doesn't know. And then for a moment, you know, so Bob's talking, and I'd look over my shoulder and I'd see the parents. And for that brief moment, it's not their son or daughter that's going through hell. It's just my son or daughter hanging out with Uncle Bob. And those moments to me, I've thought a lot about, not just the walk-off home runs, the playoff clinching games, and the funny moments. It's also the lives he touched that had nothing to do with wins and losses. And somebody in this business, that's not easy to do. And that man was the best to ever do it.
Now you're going to make me cry. That man, that was good. I'm so sorry for your loss. Just try to remember all the positive stuff so much and all the fun. It's never easy.
It'll pop up. There's going to be just some times, I'm telling you, throughout the year, I'm going to just lose it. If we just see Milwaukee and that first time going there is going to be just awful. So hang with me. It's good. Yeah. There's going to be some moments where my guard down a little bit because he made a massive impact on my life, and I'll miss him. Really will.
Only the best, my friend.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
That was great. That was great. Under extraordinarily difficult circumstances, another reminder why Corey Provis is such a tremendous broadcaster. Let's pause.